Following program has adult language and plenty of spoilers. Listener, be advised.
Annihilation Day. A destructive force punctures through the edge of our universe and slaughters millions of worlds. The moment this annihilation wave tore into our universe is marked as Annihilation Day. Annihilation Day plus 7. Xandar, the homeworld of the intergalactic peacekeeping force known as the Nova Corps, is attacked by Annihilus, the wave's undisputed ruler and his armada. The ensuing battle is devastating. The Nova Corps falls all too quickly. Annihilation Day plus 11. Richard Rider, the last surviving Nova, interfaces with the Xandarian World Mine, the planet's supercomputer that controls the Nova Force, in order to save the Xandarian culture. The World Mine downloads both its power and knowledge directly into Nova's body and mind. The power is so great that Richard fears losing control and going insane. After unleashing the Nova Force on an Annihilation Wave battleship, Nova falls back to the ruins of Xandar, where he meets Drax the Destroyer and Cammy, two survivors of the genocide. The three find a Nova Corps spaceship and are rescued in space by the Earth hero Quasar, protector of the universe. Quasar brings the trio to Nykos Aristides, a refugee for those fleeing the Annihilation Wave. Nova and Drax agree to help Quasar's evacuation efforts just as the wave descends upon the planet. Nova creates a giant stargate to evacuate the refugees, but the operation will take time. Time they don't have. The Annihilation Wave is upon the convoy. Light years away, an Annihilus senses a great power Nova has unleashed. He sets out to find the source and descends upon the evacuation effort.
Wasn't Nykos Aristides the guy that Jackie O hooked up with after Jack Kennedy died? How The Thing had his own series in the early 80s?
The what?
The Thing, Ben Grimm.
Yeah.
I look at this cover. It's got like a silhouette of Batman, or that's what they're trying to give you the impression of. You're seeing Batman's ears and silhouette projected against The Thing, and he's like, oh no, not him. And then you go and you crack open the book because you're expecting Thing Batman or something approximating that. But it turns out, no, it's the Sphinx. And so in the early 80s, it's like, who the hell is the Sphinx? And then you do one of those Marvel recaps, the Sphinx was some guy who fought Nova. Who the hell is Nova? Nova was a freaking footnote. That's basically my entry point into Nova as a kid. It's like, who the hell is this guy? He's the guy who fought the guy that fought the Thing in his short-lived series. That's where I came at to Nova from. And then later on, he joined the New Warriors. And he's supposed to be a cosmic guy, and then he turns up in the New Warriors. Did you ever read any Nova stuff? Didn't you some read, like, the Eric Larson series or something?
The who?
Eric Larson did a series in the late 90s, I think it was, early 2000s.
No, the only Nova stuff I ever read was when he was with the New Warriors, and he's with the bouncy guy and the fish chick, and I was like, wow, this
Speedball
is really lame.
And
yeah, I thought it was really
Namorita.
Lame.
Namorita.
So I thought,
Namorita was in my head, but I'm like, that can't be right.
I thought Nova was another Cannonball ripoff, so I was just like, wow, they have two really speedsters that bump in the show.
I
was like,
yeah,
okay.
For some reason, I guess I knew that Nova was a cosmic guy, but to me, whenever I think Nova, I think New Warriors.
Yeah,
I think he probably got introduced to more people through that in the early 90s than he ever did in his own series.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was always a cosmic character, was he?
What I decided to do, we read this a few months back, and it's been so long, taking us so long to get through the podcast, we had to reread it. So in the meantime, I read this little collection Marvel put out of the first and fourth issue of, I believe it was a 1979 or 1980 series, The Man Called Nova, created by Marv Wolfman. And he's really, really obviously a Green Lantern ripoff. It's like, you know, you had all these creators, especially in the Silver Age, where they're trying to do something new, mm-hmm. or they're borrowing from books and stuff. And then by the 70s, the guys get so damn lazy, they're just ripping off other comic book properties. So this guy's a straight up, he's Green Lantern. You got this Nova, I think he's Nova Prime,
mm-hmm.
and he's beat up. And apparently this one evil alien guy destroyed his world, killed his family, and broke his ass. And so he's flying the ship with all these braces on him, trying to contain himself long enough to find a successor to get vengeance for him for the death of his family and to succeed him as part of this Nova Corps, although they don't go into detail about that too much just yet. So he's freaking Abin Sur. And so he sends his power to this random kid, Richard Rider. He goes into a coma briefly, he's hospitalized, and when he wakes up, he has this Nova powers, and the alien guy just happens to show up in Long Island, so Nova fights him, and combination of the efforts of Nova and the dying Nova Prime, they destroy the alien, and then he carries on with the powers. But he's got basically the same power set as Green Lantern, except he doesn't really do the constructs. One thing that I hate about a lot of creators that knock off other creators is that he's clearly Peter Parker. I don't know about you guys. One of the reasons why I kind of hate Spider-Man, especially as I got older, is because so many characters are, it's Spider-Man, but as this. or Peter Parker, but is this. And this guy was like Peter Parker. He had the same setup. The Betty Brant type character who's his buddy in high school. He's got the Flash Thompson bully type guy. He's got like a nerdy guy, kind of like Harry Osborn, that he's friends with as well. The main distinction is that you look at Peter Parker, he was still a pretty bright kid. He was a nerd, so he had lacked for social skills, but he still was running science projects. The whole reason why he got bitten by the spider, he's at a science exhibit. You know, that's he's in that room because he's a smart kid. Then you take this guy, Richard Rider, and they want to make him even more normal than Peter Parker. So he's completely unexceptional. He's not smart. He's no good at sports. He's this guy, like, last pick. They made a big deal in the first issue about he got beaten by a girl at basketball. So it's not only he's a lame-o, but it's also sexist because they made a big point of it being, oh, a girl beat you. And what's funny, too, is the jock that harasses him, whose name I don't recall, he's actually, like, smart, too. He's a great straight-A student. So it's not just like he's the jock, he's envious of the nerd guy. It's like, no, he's really smart, he's really athletic, he's a great-looking guy, he's got a pretty girlfriend that Richard Rider's lusting after, and he picks on Richard because he's just so stressed out from having to meet the expectations of everybody that he needs to vent on somebody, and Richard's just such a fucking loser, he just vents at that guy. And of course, Richard's lusting after his girlfriend. He's got a perfectly great girl next to him who's calling him cutie all the time. She may not be quite as hot as the other girl, but hook up with that. If you're not exceptional in any way, then you're lucky to have somebody like that. Why are you overlooking this girl? She's a nerd, but she's hotter than most any girl that you're ever going to see because she's a comic book character. So this guy gets his power, but he's completely unexceptional. And in the other issue that they reprint, number 4, he fights Thor because Thor gets corrupted by the Corruptor to fight Nova and show his power. And Nova still doesn't quite beat him. Okay, you didn't beat the guy who you got the powers to beat. It was mostly Nova Prime who did that. You're fighting Thor. You do a good showing against Thor, but Thor's compromised, so it doesn't really count, and you end up fighting to a standstill, so you don't really show anything. So it's no wonder this fucking loser got bumped down to the New Warriors in the 90s instead of being a big cosmic badass. Why would you root for him? It's one of those situations where you almost feel like the writer's using it as a proxy character, and the only thing this guy had going for him is he liked comic books. He's just waiting for the universe to bestow powers on him because he's not going to do anything for himself. Where instead of you have a Peter Parker where it's a relatable character, but still a little bit aspirational, it's just like, no, he's just a fucking loser. He's one of those anonymous guys that go through high school that never accomplish anything, and he's just gifted these powers. But he's a fucking schmuck.
God, he makes it like the kid should kill himself.
Wow, I hate Nova now.
He should rent a gun and buy a bullet. Apparently, because he's unexceptional.
But see, then we read the Annihilation Nova miniseries. Let's face it, these haven't necessarily been the strongest material.
I'd say it started with the prologue.
Oh, as far as liking Nova?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think the prologue, to this point, it was probably the best. I mean, it was one issue, which is what we've kind of decided that all of these four-part minis probably should have been. Just one
double-size special.
Double-size special. Yeah. So that was the right length, had good energy. Totally get Nova throughout the course of it. You end up rooting for him, which, again, it's difficult to do in some of these four-parters.
I'm not being too presumptuous. Of the miniseries we've read so far, this has been the best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the reason for that is because, again, you've got the Annihilation prologue that's already set everything up. Here you have this big old bullshit Green Lantern Corps knockoff. So they just wipe those fuckers out in one story, and here's this one guy left standing. Everybody else is dead, and he's the unexceptional guy, the guy who, like I was just saying, might as well just go kill himself anyway because you're pissed as shit.
Yeah.
Well, now the entire legacy of the Nova Corps is on this guy. So regardless of what he was capable of, he has to step up, or else it's on his back that the entire Nova Corps gets wiped out. He's the one guy who can keep it alive. So immediately you have stakes, where a lot of these other series, less so.
Well, it's not just the Corps, it's the Xandarian
civilization.
Civilization. Everything.
Yeah, but it's called the World Mind, right?
Yeah.
So basically it's like this computer that holds all their history, all their culture, their raw power. Yeah. He's freaked out. He's got survivor guilt. But because he's the one guy left standing who could take it, they download the World Mind into him and all the raw power that the Nova Corps has available. He basically, again, absorbs the Owen power battery.
My first real big question with this. Was he downloaded into Richard Rider's mind?
Yeah,
or was he uploaded? We'll get back to that later on the podcast.
Wow, man. That's like, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
I'm going to need a bowl to contemplate that question.
That's what the kids call meta nowadays. That was thinking about that question.
You see this?
Meta. No, they don't see it because this is...
My brains were just blown.
This is audio.
I literally took I took Richard Rider's gun and I blew my brains out because my brains are just blown.
He dumps the world mine and he's freaking out, like you said in the synopsis. But then they didn't talk about Drax or Kimmy at all.
I think they're mentioned in there.
They set up in the Annihilation prologue that these guys were on the Xandarian base. Xandarian base got blown to bits, but they were two of the only survivors because Drax was able to save Kimmy. But they're stranded on this planet. So not only do you have Nova freaking out, trying to deal with all this raw power and information running through his brain, but now he's also got these two survivors that are pretty persuasive because he's all fucked up and they're manipulating the hell out of him.
Well, he got some bloodlust going on. Like, he wants to fight. He wants to destroy.
Drax, or Nova?
Nova.
Both of them, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, even when he was down and beat, he attacks a couple of these Annihilation Wave creatures. Nova Prime is telling him, stop. You're too hurt. You're, like, at 12%. Like, quit fighting. And he's like, no, it's payback time. And then when it downloads into him, he wipes it. Like, he goes batshit crazy.
Yeah, because
He goes Dark Nova, and he wipes out this Annihilation Wave that's above the planet, and he kind of freaks him out because apparently this had happened to another character who had the entire, I guess, civilization downloaded into him, and he went crazy because he brings it up. This time, Nova Prime, the system is telling him, well, I'm here. I'm going to help you deal with it, but he's still having problems because he's scared. You know, he has his finger on the trigger, and he's scared to pull it because he knows it's going to happen again, and that's kind of where we introduce Drax, which actually I thought Drax was written really well in these books.
Yeah, this is
by far
so much
by
better
far
than the series.
Is more likable here than he is in the miniseries. It's not even close. He's got kind of a
dry humor.
You got that dry sense of humor.
Well, and even Kimmy, her acid tongue works so much better when she's playing off these cosmic guys, because instead of her beating up this poor little runt kid that's hanging out with her, she's talking smack to virtual gods. So it actually is kind of fun because she's so far outside of her place.
Doesn't she make an observation that Nova's got a nice ass or something like that?
Nice glutes.
Nice glutes.
Very tight outfit, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she sees Quasar, and it's like, oh, my God, you actually look cornier than Nova.
Yeah.
You're wearing a cape, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very funny.
Well, I love the fact when he asks him, are you Drax the Destroyer? He goes, no, different guy.
Like, yeah, much taller. That other guy's much taller.
Yeah.
And it's a running gag throughout the book, too.
Yeah, so.
And it's funny pretty much every time they do it, too. They don't beat it into the ground. They do these little twists on it to keep it fresh.
Well, until as Drax says, I had to talk to his hat. Whenever Richard tosses them the warp.
Right. But the world mine, to a large degree, the interface exists within the helmet that Nova wears. And with Drax on his butt, Kimmy on his butt, the world mind talking to him, he finally gets fed up, takes the helmet off, throws it at Drax. Drax's like, all right, screw it. He puts the helmet on and starts talking to the world mind. They reach an understanding.
Yeah. Even though they know he's a mass murderer and they're freaking out that they're gonna do business with him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought it was actually well written. Out of all the books we've written so far, or read so far, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning who first got together. Yeah, back in the late 80s, early 90s, they did Death's Head 2 and stuff. They used to do the Legion, and they were one of the spearheads behind Guardians of the Galaxy, as seen in the movies. They're the ones who did the first volume of Guardians of the Galaxy in the 20th century.
Yeah, with Groot and Nowhere. Yeah, that's the Guardians I read that I enjoy, not the new crap that's coming out that I'm just...
What gets me, too, is my understanding is James Gunn, the guy who partially, if not fully, wrote the screenplay, there's some dispute about that, and directed Guardians of the Galaxy. He's on record as not liking Nova. He didn't really want to deal with the big cosmic guys like that. But in terms of tone, the Nova miniseries is probably closer to Guardians of the Galaxy than anything else we've read because of that sarcasm and the banter and the strong sense of character. Because what's good is there's humor and there's sarcastic humor, but each character is written so that whatever they say is in character. Nova has his personality, Quasar has his, Kimmy, Drax, everybody. They have a strong sense of identity. You don't screw them over to get to the humor. You allow the humor to come from their natural personalities. Totally, I think it was a lot more like Guardians than any other miniseries we've read so far. And the fact that Abnett Lanning wrote it means, okay, I guess maybe it was an inspiration to that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The art was interesting.
By far, I enjoyed it.
It was Kev Walker. That guy's got to be British because there's way too many English influences in the artwork, but it's really scattershot from panel to panel. You don't know necessarily what you're going to get from panel to panel, right?
He doesn't really seem to have a defined style as he goes through it. Some scenes look a little more anime-ish. Some look more traditional.
The first issue looks a lot like Keith Giffen and Charlie Adler.
It's a lot dirtier, right?
It's a little Scott Collins in there, and then as the series progresses, there's a lot more Paul Gulacy, which is a weird mix for that kind of style. You've got Mike McMahon. You've got Kev O'Neill, I think, was in there a little bit, like some of the noses and the angles and stuff. It was interesting, but visually inconsistent. Worked well enough, but if I try to copy this guy's style myself, I wouldn't know where to start because there's so many different disparate influences there.
Well, but I thought that he really did a good job. Whenever Nova would start to lose control, he would draw Nova with this manic look on his face, so you could kind of tell when he's starting to freak out. All the big splash pages, big explosions, stargates sucking in the universe and stuff. I thought he did a really good job of that stuff. The armada looked really big.
Well, ships look better in this book than I think any place else. And I don't know if anybody's ever drawn Annihilus as well.
Thank you. That's what I was about to say. This dude nails Annihilus. He looks freaking awesome in these books. And I don't know if he has influenced from some other...
I don't think so. I think that was him. Because that's the thing. I don't think... It's not like some of the issues we had with another artist. I don't think he's... I don't think the art is on his board. I just think that he's got a really weird mix of influences, and sometimes he veers more towards favoring one influence over another. But the way he drew Annihilus was not like anybody's ever drawn Annihilus. So that's very unique. I loved how he's insectoid, but he's also got diabolical, and he does a really good job of shading him so that he looks very intimidating and scary and otherworldly.
And his fight scenes are really good, too. I thought everything really worked in this book, whereas in some of the other ones, the writing might have been a little bit better, but it was like a disconnect with the artist where maybe they were trying to rely on the artist to tell some parts of the story, and it just doesn't work. This one, I just felt that the writing and art finally fit together, and I could read the book without being distracted by dumb stuff.
Like I said, it's a weird art style, but it was kinetic and raw too.
Yep.
And I would not say that there has been anybody else who's written as well as we've seen in this series so far. Adam and Lanny, I think, blew everybody else away in terms of the quality.
That recap I did is at the beginning of the fourth issue. We set the stage for this fourth issue. This planet is trying to evacuate all their people before the Annihilation Horde gets there and destroys, wipes out their race. Quasar and
Nova
decide that they can't defeat Annihilation's wave, but they just need to stall for, I think,
10 minutes.
Estimated 10 minutes that they keep coming back to the...
Quasar, and Nova creates a stargate so to get those people away from the planet. But they still need to buy time or else they're going to get destroyed en route through the space warp. So these guys know they're probably going to die. They know that what they're doing is kamikaze run to do whatever they can to buy 10 minutes to get that armada out of there. These guys, if they don't get these guys evacuated, then you're going to lose an entire culture just like what happened in Xandar. And these guys, you can tell they're putting their lives on the line.
And I like that they make a point of telling each other, we've got no shot. It's not one of those things where it's two guys against a quote-unquote endless horde. Oh, and they just defeat them all and that's it. They at no point fool themselves into thinking that they're going to survive this. It's just how long are we going to survive the 10 minutes, which is always another large span of time for two cosmic beings. All right, can we survive a 10-minute battle? So they do a good job saying, look, we're going to get wrecked. We just have got to give it everything for 10 minutes.
Every second that they buy is that many more thousands, if not millions, of people who can get away from.
So you layer in the fact that the ships are trying to escape, that Quasar and Nova essentially have more or less than 10 minutes to live. And then you layer onto that, Nova's exhibiting this massive amounts of power, which has blipped up Annihilus's radar. So now Annihilus is saying, no, 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 we got to go get these two dudes.
We're all about eating energy. These guys have so much energy. We don't care about these other people now. We just want to eat them.
Right.
And the guys don't know that the game has changed.
They don't realize. So Drax is telling them, this is Annihilus' work. It's a hive mind.
Headshot.
You got to take the headshot. If you can take out Annihilus, the horde stops functioning. Little do they know, as you've said, the game has changed. So they think they're going after Annihilus now. And really, Annihilus is saying, let them come because I'm about to take these dudes out and take all their power.
Nova and Quasar have some pretty key moments in this story, redefining the characters in there. I made a point of reading the first issue of Quasar from 89 before we came into this, and what's funny is they make a big point of he's a do-gooder. He's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and he's trying to train to become a combat agent, but his father's a scientist, and Dum Dum Dugan realizes that he just doesn't have the killer instinct. He's not a guy who's going to go in for those kill shots. So they're going to probably reassign him to security detail or a desk job, and that's actually what happens. He's reassigned to guard his dad, who's studying the quantum bands that once belonged to Marvel Boy, but these things have a nasty tendency to destroy anybody who wears them. Over the course of this origin story, AIM attacks the compound where they're doing the study. Quasar, Wendell Vaughn is the fellow's name, he puts on the bands and he fends off AIM because he lacks that killer instinct, because he's like resigned that he's going to die and he's going to sacrifice himself to save everybody. He actually doesn't die because he's able to allow the energy to flow through him without fighting it, and so he can actually control the energy. He's much more adaptable than other people were, and he doesn't die, and it allows him to progress into a decent career. He had a book that ran for about 5 years. this. But I liked that because he's a sweet-natured guy, because he's more concerned about saving people than he is for himself, and he's not about the power trip. He's just about controlling it and using it effectively to help others. And that's reflected in this series. And who would care if you screwed up Quasar's characterization?
Yeah.
But it's a real credit to the writers that they kept these characters so well in character, even fairly obscure ones, even ones that people don't even necessarily like, with the Silver Surfer miniseries. We came out of that miniseries. We didn't like Silver Surfer any more than we came into it. In fact, I think we probably liked him a little bit less after reading it, where I never gave a rat's ass about Quasar and Nova, but by the end of the miniseries, I liked these guys and wanted to see more about them. I bothered to read Quasar number one because I enjoyed how he was handled in this miniseries.
Yeah, they really do a good job of... It's weird. I mean, we're talking about comic characters, but they really had a good chemistry, Nova and Quasar, in this series.
And so similar.
Much so, I'm like, man, these guys should have a freaking book together. I would straight up read a Nova-Quasar team-up book.
And see, on the surface, they're almost exactly the same. So their ability to find those little differences about how they use their powers, their costumes, their personalities, that's a very delicate thing to pull off for characters that functionally are almost exactly the same, these two Cosmic Defender guys. It's fantastic they managed to do that and do it so well.
I think we could all agree this is the first four-part series that we were perfectly fine with it being four issues.
Yeah, I needed that
perfect
space.
Fit.
Yeah, we weren't like, oh my god, I'm not even at the fourth issue yet. I think we ripped through these pretty quickly, and then it was funny because I was like, well, I don't really remember this all four issues quite so well as I'd like to, so let me go ahead and just read the fourth issue again. I read the fourth issue, and I ended up going back through and damn near rereading the first three because I was like, oh man, I forgot how good this was.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started rereading them, and I think we all ended up basically rereading
exactly,
them over again.
I didn't make it all the way back to number one, but I would have if I'd had the time. It was great. It was so much fun, and I knew that I liked the series, but the fact that I could read it less than 6 months later and enjoy it just as thoroughly as the first time, it's fantastic how well it held up.
This one ends and says Continued Annihilation
Number one.
Others have not ended that way, right?
I'm not sure they have, but
the scroll didn't.
No, well, we know for sure. Yeah, the scroll didn't.
But this one feels definitely essential, and that's a complaint that Mr. Fixit especially has had, where it's like, these are nice little character studies, but we don't need all the space. You needed every issue here, and this issue tells you the story of Annihilation. This is something you cannot extricate from the Annihilation series without lessening it. It's important to establishing who Annihilus is, because Annihilus is probably better handled here than he was in the actual Annihilation miniseries. He is cool as shit in this fucking miniseries. Everybody is. You really like these characters and you really want to find out what's going to happen to them, and Annihilation matters to you as an event in a way that the other miniseries just can't keep up with.
Yeah, like you said, this miniseries feels bigger. You're invested in the characters, feel the urgency. It's got the most shock value. Just from beginning to end, this miniseries hits every point you'd want to hit with a reader. Say, as a reader, you get everything you want out of any story in these four issues.
I can agree with that.
I don't think we have anything more to add, do we?
No, go read Nova. Go pick up Prologue number one and read the Nova four-part, and then start Annihilation, probably.
Also, it's available on Marvel Unlimited.
Yep.
They really got to cut us a check. It's time once again to open up the Mighty Marvel mailbag. Our WordPress blog has earned Charlton Hero as a follower, and our Google Plus page added Luke Dobb, or vice versa, I should say. New Twitter follows include Geeks with Wives and Capes, Gil, Kelly V. Dolan, Romeo Brown, and Underbelly Comics. Particularly like Romeo Brown there, he's got a picture of a cosplayer, possibly himself, as Nick Fury, and it just goes really well with the name. Romeo Brown! Dig that. Anyway, Twitter favorites came from BCX Radio, Caleb Williams, Charlton Hero, Chris Thompson, CJ, Count Druncula, David Golding Artist, Eel Perrin, Eternal Rage, Geeks with Wives and Capes, Gordon L. Lee, Infinity Watcher, Jason Martinez, Jinx, Keith Bowden, Longbox Graveyard, Luke Dobb, Micah Simmons, Nerd Fu, Odell Abner Dracula, Oscar Olalde, Pirate Mike, Professor Riptide, Sam Lowe, Sean McLaughlin, Siskoid, Sin, The Sheridans, The Marvel Legion, The Yunky, Top 5 Road Crew, and We Are Wakanda. Retweets came from Ange, Charlton Hero, Eternal Rage, Felicia Capcom, Infinity Watcher, Luke Dobb, Sam Lowe, Sean McLaughlin, Silver Age Sensations, Sin, The Yunky, and Top 5 Road Crew. As for comments, Jason Martinez let us know that he's listening to Annihilation Silver Surfer, the 2006 miniseries episode, and Iron Man is Born. Caleb Williams was one of the Follow Friday recommendations, and we retweeted him out, and he said, ha, woo, ooh, ooh. Sean Corey asked, anyone out there doing a Marvel UK podcast? Death's Head, Knights of Pendragon, that kind of stuff? If not, somebody should, yes? And I do agree. I really would like to do a Marvel UK podcast. I was a fan of those books back in the 80s and early 90s. And I recently read the Revolutionary War book, which if you read the original titles, would be great fun for you. And if you did not read the original titles, would probably be absolutely meaningless to you. It's just a matter of I don't think we're going to be able to get around to it in the 2014 calendar year. We've already got a pretty packed schedule. So hopefully in 2015, we can touch on Marvel UK. Eternal Rage tweeted, hashtag Green Arrow equals hashtag Rich Douche as the best description I've heard for Ollie in a while. He also said, I've been a follower of the Hulk, not much of a fan. Peter David is where I started reading the Hulk, but when he left, so did I. The Hulk episode was great. So many origin stories for the same brute. Much more entertaining when told by you chumps, chaps. Said with utmost respect, I'm not as cultured or refined as the good fellow Professor Riptide. My people skills are lacking. I've enjoyed all so far, even the old phonograph recordings. And the Hulk episode represented the last of the really, really old material that we had done when we first got started. We're hoping to improve mightily in the near future. We're actually working on a new mic setup, which you'll hopefully get to hear relatively soon, but we're still tweaking that. CJ noted of episode 10, A Night with Mac and Fix-It, Frank Free. Frank must have been proud of you two for this one. Fix-It stepped it up a notch on this one. Feels about a grand light. And I was proud of the guys. I wish they had told me instead of surprising me with it. That way I could have pushed the episode into its own week, giving us a little bit more breathing room with my trip and everything. I could have probably used another week's break. But I thought it was a great episode, and I enjoyed it mightily. And if they want to surprise me again, don't. Go ahead and record it, edit it, and then tell me so I can schedule it, bastards. Siskoid commented on episode 11, Annihilation Super Scroll 2006, Vote Mayor Robocop. Also, gender politics, I call hashtag Frank's agenda. With the asterisk, I am totally a proponent of that agenda as well. Siskoid also commented on episode 12, Beware the Claws of the Cat. Big fan of Tigress since the West Coast Avengers, but never read her original stories as the cat. I just realized Greer sounds like Grr, which is perfect for a tiger woman, though perhaps not as obvious for a cat woman. True that, but we'll get to that place. Professor Riptide said of the Hulk episode, another fun episode, guys. Looking forward to the next one. CJ concurred. Mac, when he had the stinger notation, does the Hulk podcast suck? CJ said, me, nah. It's another good origin PC. Just some friends talking about comics and is great. Yeah, that was an episode because it was full of so much older material and I was kind of scraping some barrels there. We weren't sure how that one was going to turn out. And I think we were all pleasantly surprised. And noted of the same episode, another fun episode. You should trademark, you've been franked. And it's funny, that was something that Mr. Fix-It was doing with some of our early recordings. Those were actually from more than one session, and it just so happened they all kind of came together for that one episode. So we didn't want to give you more Frank than you really wanted, but I'm glad you guys took it as well as you did. Luke Dobb noted, thanks for the mention. I've wanted to check out the podcast for a while. Great show. And he sent us a pic. I believe it's an Earl Norum painting from one of the old 70s Hulk magazines. Great pic. Luke Dobb's a really talented guy, too, so I'm hoping we'll get to show some of his stuff here in the future. Count Dracula noted another great episode. I got into the Hulk from watching reruns of the Bill Bixby television series, and he's been one of my favorite Marvel heroes ever since. In fact, the Hulk and Captain America frequently vie for the number 3 spot on my top whatever list of Marvel superheroes, and switch places from day to day or week to week. The first Hulk comics I read were in the early to mid 90s. I distinctly remember my mom buying a copy of Incredible Hulk number 420, I think, for me because it had the red AIDS awareness ribbon on the cover, and it was supposed to be an important comic. Just a quick aside, I remember that actually did get media attention. I was reading the book at the time, too. Anyhow, I'm surprised Peter David's run on Incredible Hulk hasn't gotten the hardcover omnibus treatment yet. I would think Marvel would at least try to push an overpriced, oversized collection of the McFarlane issues, even though those are probably my least favorite part of David's whole tenure. I enjoy older Hulk comics from the Herb Trimpe era. I love most of Peter David's extended run. But I think my favorite Hulk comics are actually the Bruce Jones era from the early 2000s. They weren't perfect. They weren't even all that good necessarily, but I liked the moodier horror tone of the series at that time. Yeah, I thought that was interesting because as much as I liked Peter David, I do feel like he got away from a lot of the basics of the Hulk, sometimes beneficially because so many of the Hulk tropes have been run into the ground by that point that you needed to have a completely fresh perspective. But the problem is, when you do that for 12 years, you can lose touch of what made that character in the first place. And I do think that Bruce Jones got back to that. And I remember a number of people, including Mr. Fix-It, being pretty excited about that run in the early days, except it, like the X-Files that it was riffing on, it just kept pushing the mystery to the point where you no longer cared anymore. So that was a good start to a run. Not so sure it finished that great, though. Finally, we've got Charlton Hero, who notes, great episode, guys. Great coverage of the 80s Hulk cartoon series and others. Be sure to tweet me with any new shows. Really enjoyed the Hulk episode. I base my appreciation of a podcast on a number of things, all of which you guys did very well. The three of you as hosts were engaged, knowledgeable, and fun to listen to. Great synergy and knowledge of the Hulk topic. You guys dug into details, and as a listener, I appreciated that. The comparisons between origins of all series of Hulk cartoons was on the money. Appreciate the shout-out as well. Thanks, guys. Great work. I'll keep listening. Hero. He sure did keep listening. From here, he noted, I liked episode 13 with the Hulk so much that I am starting at zero and listening to the archive. Very much enjoyed episode zero and your coverage of Marvel superheroes. As a comics kid in the 80s, I can relate to every word. I agree wholeheartedly on the Mike Zeck discussion. Zeck drew arguably the best Cap and Punisher and is often lost in discussions of best artists of the Bronze Age. The three comics in a bag chat was also great. I often snapped up the three bags containing G.I. Joe, Transformers, and scattered issues of Raw. Either way, great show, guys. Onward to episode one. Carrying on, episode one down. Being the knowledgeable comics fan I thought I was, you guys got me on the Namor cartoon. Literally had never seen this before. Looked like I missed nothing. The clip was terrible. One thing for sure, Namor does not make great comics or cartoons, but you guys managed a great podcast on him. Go figure. Fun episode, guys. I am marching on to episode two. Great show, guys. My hatred of Marvel Cosmic knows no bounds. However, after reading a batch of Starlin stuff, plus glowing reviews on Longbox Graveyard and on this podcast, I appreciate the cosmic genre. I may be in the minority here, but pre-Guardians of the Galaxy movie, that franchise, and Marvel Cosmic titles in general were poor. Titles like Warlock, Guardians Original Cast, and Inhumans were filled with Jesus Christ Superstar Gaga, Jim Starlin's giant acid trip. I fear, however, that Guardians has prolonged the lifespan of a very crappy corner of the Marvel Universe. I will admit the movie presented Cosmic in a way that drew me in. One major fault of 90s Marvel Cosmic was the art of Ron Lim. I was never a fan of his work, as all his characters all look the same. I digress. Loving the show. Onwards to episode 3. A hearty thrashing of the latest Superman-Batman franchises. Great hearing that. All true, by the way. As for the Asian Doctor Strange, with that guy from Harold and Kumar films, no. Horrible, horrible idea. An idea so bad, it would no doubt be met with the unbridled hatred the new Fantastic Four movie is getting. Either way, great debates on this episode, including the beatdown on Warrior version of Wonder Woman. Give me the Star Spangled Shorts and Lasso any day. Anyways, I'll continue my march to episode 4. Wish he did, but I figure we could probably separate these out a little bit. I don't want to completely overwhelm you guys with Charlton Hero. Wonderful words, great words of praise, definitely heartening. Thank you very much, Charlton Hero. Hero out.
The Marvel Superheroes podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Side note, I included some tweets and retweets and such from folks on my personal account because some folks have been commenting on the podcast through that account and I had been neglecting them, so I tried to go back and catch up with some of these fellows. Keith G. Baker, and we ended up getting a conversation about Doctor Strange, which picks up from what Charlton Hero was saying. Keith G. Baker said, Clive Owen is already playing Doctor Strange on the Nick, which I haven't seen yet. Cinemax series, heard good things though. I'm going to try to check that out soon. But the Doctor Strange movie has been having some troubles in terms of finding a star. Personally, I've had some troubles with the movie because they went after Joaquin Phoenix for quite a while. That was an interesting choice, but really wasn't one of my favorites. And then their Marvel shortlist of Tom Hardy, Benedict Cumberbatch, Jared Leto. I'm worrying because Doctor Strange is one of my favorite heroes. While we haven't gotten around to a podcast episode with him yet, know that that's forthcoming. But I kind of wanted to get some words in before we actually do have a final casting. Recently, Ethan Hawke was floated, but my understanding is that that was just internet nonsense. He would actually be an okay guy for Doctor Strange. A lot of people have also mentioned Oscar Isaac. Not terribly familiar with him. There was a video that came out recently from Cinema Blend where they were listing a bunch of actors that I thought were just absolutely terrible for the part of Doctor Strange. Their choices included Patrick Wilson, Mads Mikkelsen, James fucking Franco, Johnny friggin' Depp, and Matthew Good. It just pissed me off because I could tell from listening to these guys, they didn't know fuck all about who Doctor Strange is. And I think that that's actually fairly common. I don't think a lot of people have read Doctor Strange comic books. I grew up on them. I'm a fan of that character. I'm greatly looking forward to the movie. I'm hoping that they don't fuck it up. But when I hear these kind of names tossed around, it seems ever more likely that they will. So just as a little quickie thing to throw in here at the end of the episode, I wanted to give you my top five list of preferred actors from Diablo Frank for the Doctor Strange role. I've already said John Cho. I'm not backing off of that. I'm going to defend that. John Cho is known largely for the Harold and Kumar movies, but he is a serious actor. He's done some great dramatic acting. And what I love about Cho is that besides having the physicality and he's in the right age range and he looks more like the earliest version of Doctor Strange that Steve Ditko drew, but also he's an actor who can bring dramatic gravitas to ridiculous material. Doctor Strange is a character that the actor has to buy into, or you're going to end up with goddamn Johnny Depp mugging in front of a camera for 2 friggin' hours. And you need an actor who is willing to bring that kind of game to a character that as difficult to take seriously as Doctor Strange and all the mystical elements of the Marvel Universe. I think John Cho can do that. It's unfortunate that he's doing stuff like Selfie right now. Not a great show, but he is a very underrated actor. I think he'd be wonderful in the role. But since so many people have pushed back on the John Cho choice, I'll offer as a second option Adrian Brody. Brody's been a guy I've wanted to be involved in the Marvel Universe for a while now. I think he would have been probably the best possible Bruce Banner if you're going by some of the classic comics. I think he also would have been an interesting Hank Pym Ant-Man. So I just really want to get him in there somewhere. But aside from Banner, probably the best part you could lay him at his feet would be Doctor Strange, because he's another guy who can play in those weird places. But unlike, say, a James Franco, he isn't going to out-ridiculous the material. I think that Brody's a guy who, if he decides to take on the challenge of a role, he's going to do his best to live up to that role and really get sink his teeth into it. And if he reads the old comic books, I think he'd recognize that Doctor Strange isn't a character that's goofy. He's not a weirdo. He's not bizarre. So you need somebody who is very serious, who's going to take the role seriously. If you're suggesting guys that are just generic magic-type guys, it just doesn't work for me. Just because the guy's got an English accent doesn't mean he has any business being Doctor Strange. And in that light, my third pick would be John Hamm from Mad Men. Hamm, I believe, has done filming with Mad Men at this point. He hasn't had a lot of success with his other ventures. He's a guy who can be goofy and have fun, but he also, when he's into a role and it's a straight, serious, dramatic role, he brings his game. He's also just extraordinarily charismatic, and that's the kind of guy you can put into a room with Robert Downey Jr. and he isn't going to lose his bearings, especially in a role like Doctor Strange where he's going to bring that mysticism with him. Another thing is, if you look at a lot of the Doctor Strange stories, especially the early stuff with Ditko, that was a sharp-dressed man. That was a guy who was always in nice suits, Dora hats, great-looking guy, and a lot of his stories were thrillers. They were about intrigue, not so much hocus-pocus type of thing. My fourth pick would be Keanu Reeves, who I know isn't the most revered of actors, but he is somebody who I think could bring, again, that level of seriousness to Doctor Strange. And also, he does an excellent job of countering a lot of the problems Marvel had with Joaquin Phoenix. Keanu Reeves has extensive experience with wire work. He can work in a CGI environment. He can work against green screen. He knows what he's doing there. Now, Keanu played a somewhat similar character in John Constantine, but the problem there is Constantine really had to be somebody who was snarky and funny. Reeves, a lot of his appeal comes from his stoicism. So, and he's also somebody who has shown that he's willing to work in the franchise structure. I think he'd be somebody who'd be willing to work with Marvel. And he's a guy who was extremely popular for a great many years, but he's fallen on hard times and hasn't had a hit in a long time. So I think that's somebody that Marvel could get and that would be appropriate for the role and could do a good job with it. My final pick, number five, much more of a dark horse, John Cusack. Anybody who was a fan of movies in the 80s and 90s probably has some love in their heart for John Cusack. A lot of that love has wavered because his film choices have not been great in recent years, and he's not really in Marvel movie shape at this point. He'd probably have to go into a workout regimen. It's not like Doctor Strange has to be a muscular, ripped-out guy and everything, but let's be honest, John Cusack has gotten a little bit doughy. But on the other hand, he's a guy who can be rough, pushing people away from him, and you still want to be around him. You still find him interesting. So anyway, those are my picks.